For those who don't know the inside of that joke, pranava is the cosmic sound of Om. And I'll do my best to represent that. I'm going to have you stand and stretch, but do it in an inward way. You know, so often we sort of break loose when we do this. Just stand and inwardly do what you want to do to stretch. And then inwardly sit down. A few years ago, I was going on a trip to fly out to the Midwest to do a number of programs for our various meditation groups there. And the plan was, in late afternoon, Parvati and I were going to drive down to Sacramento and stay overnight, because the flight for my departure was very early, and then Parvati would drop me off and come back. And this is the end of April, just a couple of years ago. And this freak late spring storm happened, and it started to, in early afternoon, just to pound down a lot of hail in large quantities. And the hail started to stay on the ground as slushy hail, snow almost. And the temperatures start to drop. And so we realized if I was going to do this trip, we needed to depart immediately. And so we loaded up the car quickly and start to drive up. Now, our residency over in the Kailash cluster has a steep incline, and we barely could make it out even that first part of the journey. And then we thought, whoa, this is going to be interesting. And so we were able to go through the canyon on Highway 49. And just before Nevada City, you all know this, that there is that big dip that you have to go through, and then you come into the flat plain again just before Nevada City. And there were numerous cars that had slid off the roadway that were in the ditches. And there we were. We were coming into that dip. And unfortunately, you know, if you're not used to driving in winter conditions, I grew up in Winnipeg, Canada. Snow was like a friendly experience of driving on. We actually used to practice in parking lots spinning the wheels. It was so much fun on the ice. So we got used to it. But a lot of people that aren't familiar with that kind of driving get overcautious. And this car before us was crawling up the hill. But you can't crawl up a slushy hill. You have to have a lot of speed and momentum. And yet that feels dangerous to someone not used to it. And so both of us, probably internally but also out loud, Parvati and I, were chanting Om. And it was interesting because it vacillated between the chanting of Om for let's make it, Divine Mother, Om, Om, which is normal for all of us. And then there was the other part of chanting that Om, was that I am in Om. I am in that experience. Whatever happens, it's part of Om. And luckily, the first part of the Om chanting got us up the hill and safely. And then we were going to stop in Grass Valley somewhere just to get some gas and grab a bite to eat before going on to Sacramento. And yet all the ramps were clogged up with vehicles sliding around and off the pavement. So we realized, well, we can't chance it. We need to keep going. And as we were going to the other edge of Grass Valley, I looked in my rearview mirror and saw, wow. You know, if you've read or seen the movies of the Lord of the Rings, you know what the Land of Mordor is about. The darkness that's there. Well, it's like this huge dark sky. I mean, just menacing darkness was behind us. And in front of us was clear sunshine. I mean, it was so much a contrast in what both Ananta and Anandi were talking about, duality. It was so visual and experience, and also very experiential, because we'd gone through this tension of getting through and making sure we were getting out of the problems of driving on the roads. And suddenly, not only there was this visual light of pure sunshine ahead of us, but just that relief of relaxation. Everything is fine. But it was such an amazing contrast. And yet, as we've been talking about all week, that's really what life is all about. And so this emphasis that Jyotish brought up in one of the classes the definition of yoga from Patanjali in the Yoga Sutras. Yoga is citta vritti nirodha. Yoga is the neutralization of these whirlpools of feeling, these vortices of feeling, that distortion. So you can see that it's really what's happening all the time is the distortion allows us to lose sight of what we're really there for. I remember that, you all know that there's a wedding taking place for Tyler Hansen and Melody West. We have to make sure that you know which Melody it is, by the way, because some people have been confused, which is happening 2 days from now, and you're all invited, as Davey mentioned. So it's 2:00 on Saturday. And I was talking with Kalidas a week or two ago, and it brought up the memory of our own wedding, Parvati and myself and our wedding a few years ago. And we had it at... and I do remember the day, by the way. So, but we had it in the back gardens, the gardens of Crystal Hermitage, out by the swimming pool. And there were a lot of people there, obviously. And part of this, and Swami was performing the wedding ceremony. And part of the ceremony that, if you don't know about it, involves a very sweet, is the way that I feel, exchange of the roses. And what the couple says to each other is very sweet. It's just very moving in that experience, both for the couple and for all those attending a wedding. But as it came time for that part of the ceremony, there were no roses in sight. there was a white rose and a red rose, and they weren't there. It was a hot August evening, and someone had, prior to the ceremony, put them carefully in one of the refrigerators in the Crystal Hermitage kitchen. And it was very interesting what happened at that point, because just like you all laughed, that's what happened at that point in the ceremony. There was sort of that nervous laughter a little bit, the giggling and laughter. And I was sitting very close to Swamiji as he was performing the wedding, of course. And, I started to feel the effect of that laughter and the nervousness in it. And he just said, I'm not sure anyone else could hear this, but he just said, softly but very firmly, he said, meditate. I mean, it was like a lightning rod, and I've always felt that image that it really was, what a lightning rod does. It just takes the energy from the electricity of lightning and grounds it. And it just felt that much power, just like a lightning stroke coming to a lightning rod. I could feel that in myself, and I could feel that, oh, that's right. This ceremony isn't about having a nice experience, which of course it is. It's very joyous. But it's about being with God. It's about being with the other person, for me, Parvati, with God. It wasn't about just having a ceremony that was meaningful, touching, joyful. Of course, that was always going to be a part of it. But this experience, it was like Divine Mother just caught me and said, no, this is with God. And that's really what Kriya is about, is that essence of coming back into that direct experience more completely, where there still may be the vacillating effects of karma, of samskaras, of the tendencies that we bring into this lifetime. But Kriya is about really that smriti, that remembrance of going back to that center, being that lightning rod that will draw everything to its highest octave. Now, with Kriya, there's really both the impersonal and personal aspects, and they're both very important. That Kriya Yoga is something we gain in initiation. It's something powerful that we're going to practice as we commit in the vow to doing as it is taught, which is every day. But then we have to, and this has been touched on by Jyotish and Devi as well through the week, that we need to make then that Kriya experience very personal. Not, of course, as we know, not from that emotional charge that it's personal, but making it so that, as Yogananda said, that we make love to God, that we really come to that experience from the depth of who we really are in a very real, direct way. Why that's important is because day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year of practicing Kriya, we will vacillate. We will get pulled back into the mundane. We will get pulled into forgetting the magnetism that's involved in the Kriya practice. And it's always good to remember that what we can do when we sit to meditate is do the yajna, the fire ceremony, in whatever way that's real to us. You know, at the Kriya ceremony, we do it actually in an outward form. We have a fire built, and we chant Om Swaha two sets of seven times. And of course, that's reflective of that it's the outward symbol that sets us in motion to deeply appreciate the inner fire rite of Kriya. But we can look at it from this other way as well, that when we sit to meditate each time, those at least twice a day times, to really enliven and make the spark of that fire deeply engrossing from the depth of our own devotion. And again, that will be very personal as an experience for each one of us. And we may go through different relationships of what that personal experience is. For one person, being personal is way too personal for someone else. And likewise, you know, you can be very impersonal, and for someone else that may be too impersonal. So it's always directly working with who you are. Each one of us finds the real power in that experience that's real for us. You know, it's interesting with Kriya that, well, lately in this last few years, this interesting thing has happened to me that in my dreams, and this hasn't happened a whole lot, but a number of times, that I found myself doing Kriya in my dreams. Now, I cognize it at the time, which is fascinating in and of itself. And then it sort of comes to the question, who is doing what here? I mean, what is happening? I mean, it's just, what is happening? I mean, I know I'm me in a certain way that I remember doing Kriya when I'm conscious, leading towards superconsciousness, hopefully. But in a dream, who is recognizing what? I mean, what really is taking place there? It's a, you know, and even upon waking a few times in these experiences, I strongly recognized I had the same experience in those Kriyas, in the dream fashion, that I did when I would meditate sitting at my meditation space. It wasn't any different. I didn't have just a vague sense of doing Kriya. It was the energy moving in the spine. It was very real. And it just made me laugh that that could be possible. But then, of course, we recognize, of course that would be the case. I mean, whether we're conscious of it or not, may or may not happen to everybody. But it would, of course, be that as we deepen our experience, that Kriya isn't something we really just do, because Kriya is happening constantly through us. And what we're doing in really using our will, our devotion, our focus in the practice of the Kriya technique is Smriti, awakening that divine remembrance of that this is our eternal truth. So Kriya isn't something we add really to our spiritual life. It isn't something we even just think of doing. More and more it becomes the natural flow of who we are in this lifetime. Because it couldn't be that it could be different than that. I mean, it's just like any of the techniques. They're set up in this really wonderful way. And Kriya probably the most, maybe energization more so. But we really have to get a handle on it. You know, the first time in this lifetime when we get Kriya, there's a number of components involved in it. And it seems, as Swami's often said, it's sort of like learning to drive on a shift drive car, a manual transmission car rather than automatic. I mean, it's probably enough for some people just to do learning driving car and automatic transmission. But it's like increased by having to figure out, you know, not only do you have to look and be aware and, you know, step on the gas and hold the wheel and be aware of your rear view mirror, your side mirrors, and in front, and the speed limit, and that it changes and all that. But add a stick shift or a manual transmission, then you've got this thing of having to push your other foot down on the clutch. And when the heck do you do that? In the beginning, it just feels like, this can't be real. Can we trade this car in for an automatic transmission? You know, and then you're shifting this thing of the gears stick, and it's like you can't really be serious that people actually do this, you know. But once you, it doesn't take long to really get into it. And then for those of us that have manual shifts, it's really great because you can at least envision that you're sort of like a race car driver. That you can But it's almost like in the techniques, and especially Kriya, it's set up with these different components to demand of us to put our energy into it with our will and to be devoted to that practice so that we really corral all of those different aspects of Kriya. And once we come to that point, then it feels more natural. Because again, Kriya isn't something foreign to us. It will seem like a new thing, perhaps a foreign thing, because maybe for a number of lifetimes we've forgotten what it is. But again, it's our true nature to be in the flow of Kriya. It's not as if we're imposing something in what we're doing with our lives. We're just opening up to it more and more. And when we get to that point, the real danger happens is when we become complacent. You know, we reach the plateaus and we're sort of just sliding, is a good visual image. We're sliding through our practice. You know, and that's true for all of them. I remember, I always love this memory of Haridas, who many of you know, that's one of our leaders, ministers, down in Torrance in Southern California now with his wife Roma. But he was here for many years, and many of us certainly have had precious times with him here. But he was comically, you know, talking about energization one time. And he said, yeah, I have this shortened version where, you know, you do the first one. And then he says, and we laugh at it, but you know, when we have the unwillingness monster attack us, hey, just do that. Just do that, you know? The first one and the last one. And just visualize all the other ones happen real quickly. But when we reach those plateaus in our daily practice of Kriya, just go back to really the remembrance of who you are with your heart's devotion. And, you know, as I said, with a fire ceremony, do something that you feel the purification with. I mean, it may be, as we talked about the other day, that Swami's often encouraged us to, at the end of the day, to sit even on our beds and visualize a fire and to toss all the obstacles that we're dealing with in our lives, to feel that touch of the divine with us. But if we can feel always that we're engaging from that very personal experience of doing Kriya, it still is impersonal in the sense that it's really the soul connecting with spirit. But for us at that moment, if we can feel the touch of that spirit in a very direct way, and that's why we use things like prayer, you know, whether it's a verbal prayer or even a thought-out prayer or just the essence of our devotion being our prayer, that if we're engaging that not so because, oh, that's what we're supposed to pray. I remember Swami said this one time. We were with him in Assisi, and we sat down. There was just a small group of us, and he just silently said the prayer over his food at the mealtime. And then he laughed and he said, yeah, when I was a young monk with Master at Mount Washington with Self-Realization Fellowship, he said, I sort of had three strikes against me at one meal. He said they were supposed to be in silence, you know, so he said he forgot to pray, and so I said, damn it. So he had the strike of not being in silence, he had the strike of forgetting the prayer, and then the strike of cursing. And he laughed when he said this to us. He just laughed because he said, these things happen on the way. But prayer is less that we're doing this to appeal. Prayer is a way to reinvigorate the devotion of our very personal connection with the masters, with the guru, with Divine Mother, in whatever way that we relate. And you think of chanting. Chanting isn't something we do to prepare for the techniques and prepare for Kriya. If you view it that way, you're sort of clearly shortchanging yourself. But let the prayer be part of your Kriya practice. Come back into the center of who you are and let the chant be just that real life experience of self-offering. And you can see why, when you have it as that emphasis, why Master would say that chanting is half the battle. It can't be just that chanting itself is half the battle. It would have to be much more powerful if it's that degree of attainment, if it's half the spiritual challenge we face. It would have to be that it's a very real experience for us that we're offering ourselves through. So that sense of offering through becomes, you know, this combination through all of these things, the art and the science, that balance of the art and science, that it's good to feel the different aspects of the techniques, like Kriya, for instance, the shifting of a manual stick shift car, to not just review them, which is, of course, the first step, but invigorate them, the different parts. Not that, okay, if I do this and get it all together, then I'll really be doing Kriya. That's not the point. The point is to be alive in each of those experiences. So the different aspects, let your devotion be there. Let that sense of self-offering, of purification be there. And then when we weave the tapestry of all those parts together, we're no longer thinking we're doing Kriya. We become alive in the experience of Kriya. Because one of the things that we always mention at the Kriya initiations, whether you're doing it for the first time or renewing your vows, is this point that if you come to the point of that real realization in Kriya, then don't worry about doing more Kriyas. Be in the experience. But then what we find, and Swami said this a number of times over the years, sometimes by deepening your devotion in the technique itself, you will actually go deeper than even that touch that you felt. And this is where the art comes in. Each one of us has to be real in that meditation for what's going on. We have to be making love to God. It isn't as if we try to make love to God. Certainly that will seem to be the reality at times when it's a struggle and things are seemingly all things are going against us. But if we can just say, no, I am in love with you. Let my experience through my meditation, especially through Kriya, come to that essence in the inner spine where the vacillating differences of duality no longer have their pull in my own personal experience. And when we're able to feel that in that way, then Kriya is the real lifeline that no longer is out there, but we've realized it as our own experience. And so in this time, you know, whether you're taking Kriya for the first time tomorrow or renewing the first Kriya or taking the second Kriya for the first time or renewing that, or you're not quite ready to take Kriya at this time, the same principles, the same emphasis of the art and science of this experience, wrap your aura around it. Wrap your entire being with a devotional self-offering into that experience and really feel that happening. So when the roses aren't there, at the appropriate times that you think, hey, wait, this is the part of life where the roses need to be exchanged, and those roses aren't there. Meditate. Come into that focus. Let that lightning rod of your own true inner self become that which takes care of all of the challenges in life. I want to end by reading one of the poems from Whispers from Eternity. And for a lot of us, we don't get to hear these poems at the end so much, but hopefully we're reading them. And this, ironically, is a poem that's used as a part of the funeral ceremony. So remember yesterday, Davey read a more personalized version of the Astral Ascension Ceremony. The Astral Ascension Ceremony is part of a longer ceremony, which is really the funeral ceremony. But this poem is often read. There are several things from Whispers from Eternity of Yogananda's that are read as a part of that. And this is one that captures not only today's energy, but this whole week. And it's the poem, Thou and I Are One. So sit upright, get your spine straight, be in the pranaba, the om of your inner self. And let these words be less words that you're hearing, but more vibrations of consciousness that you're merging with. Thy cosmic life and I are one. Thou art the ocean, I am the wave. We are one. Thou art the flame, I am the spark. We are one. Thou art the flower, I am the fragrance. We are one. Thou art the Father, I am thy child. We are one. Thou art the Beloved, I am the Lover. We are one. Thou art the Lover, I am the Beloved. We are one. Thou art the song, I am the music. We are one. Thou art the Spirit, I am all nature. We are one. Thou art my friend, I am thy friend. We are one. Thou art the Master, I am thy servant. We are one. Thou art my mother, I am thy son. We are one. Thou art my Master, I am thy disciple. We are one. Thou art the ocean, I am the drop. We are one. Thou art all laughter, I am a smile. We are one. Thou art the light, I am the atom. We are one. Thou art consciousness, I am the thought. We are one. Thou art eternal power, and I am strength. We are one. Thy peace and I are one. Thy joy and I are one. Thy wisdom and I are one. Thy love and I are one. That is why thou and I are one. Thou and I were one, and thou and I will be one evermore. Om. Amen. Night and day, night and day, I look for thee night and day, night and day.
Night and day, night and day.